On this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
It's just a matter of being comfortable, being an informed consumer, and being comfortable putting your foot down and saying, my body is precious to me. I love my body. I love myself.
But the thing is, when you are trying to serve for the happiness of the chef or the waiter to bring whatever's convenient, then you're just not serving yourself.
You know, like I tell my kids, how much you love God and love others is a lot more important than how you eat or how you look.
Health, performance, nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and much more. My name is Ben Greenfield. Welcome to the show.
Well, folks, I recently had a chance to hang out in a hotel room with a couple of my buddies. And if you think that sounds absolutely boring and like a sausage fest, then please think again, because the two guys I was hanging out with are super smart biohackers and fitness enthusiasts, Jag Chima and Chris Gethin. If you listened to a podcast episode that I recorded in Delhi when I was in India, you heard both of these cats on a big biohacking Q&A and panel that we did. And then we did another panel and Q&A in Mumbai. Now, I already released that panel and Q&A from Delhi, and I will link to that in the show notes for this episode. I'm going to be releasing one from Mumbai soon, but we actually had a chance to just sit down in the hotel room and shoot the shit about everything from vegetable oil to alcohol to immune system enhancement and a whole lot more. And we had such a great discussion that we flipped on the recorders, we recorded it for you, and I think you're going to dig this one. So I will put the show notes for everything that you hear us talking about over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/hotel hangout. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/hotel hangout. All right, folks, you may have heard the recent podcast episode I recorded with this cat who designed a drink. His name is Zach Abbott. He designed a drink that you throw back. It's a little shot, and it digests the toxic byproducts of alcohol for you, meaning that you feel great the next day after you've been drinking. And while I only endorse holiday responsible drinking and responsible drinking in general, it is nice to know you can maybe sneak in an extra cocktail or a glass of wine just because that holiday party is so freaking long and there's nothing to do but drink. So you throw back a shot of this stuff and it basically digests acetaldehyde for you, which is the chemical unwanted byproduct of alcohol. And so what they've done is they've bioengineered this probiotic to do that for you. And it works amazingly. You feel great the next day. It's very, very simple. You get a box of this stuff. You throw back a shot of it before you drink. Or if you forget, sometimes people are forgetful and you remember halfway through the party, you just throw it back then. And here's the deal. They've got steep discounts going on. You go to ZBiotics, called ZBiotics, if you're in Europe, ZBiotics.com/Ben. ZBiotics.com/Ben. You get 15% off your first order when you use code Ben at checkout. 100% money back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason because you had 8 glasses of wine and you woke up the next morning and you weren't feeling that great, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. But please don't have 8 glasses of wine. So you go to ZBiotics.com/Ben. Use code Ben at checkout for 15% off. You got to try this stuff. Everybody I've told about ZBiotics, they have literally come back and said, dude, I had no clue. I was skeptical at first. I was skeptical myself, but it actually works. Very interesting. So zbiotics.com/Ben. All right, folks. Well, cold turkey might be great on sandwiches, but there's a better way to break a bad habit than quitting that bad habit, cold turkey. I'm not talking about some weird mind voodoo from your crazy neighbor standing on a nail bed or something like that. I'm talking about this thing called Fume. This little thing called Fume holds a hallowed place in my fanny pack, actually. Been hitting up the maple pepper core in that thing quite a bit. So anyways, the Fume is not a vape. It's a flavored air device. You breathe natural flavors through it. Like I said, I got the maple pepper core loaded up in mine right now. Turns out black pepper really hits the spot, so I can feel satisfied without breathing in or chewing on anything bad. It's amazing. I've got another one called the crisp mint core, so I can breathe in mint flavored air rather than a pen infused with something else. You know what I mean? That kind of bad habit that isn't good for you. Instead, you just basically use this pen, and it is an essential oil pen. It's amazing. A flavored air device. You get the taste sensation and the fidget and that hand-to-mouth action, but you don't have to feel guilty about the habit. It's a good habit to have. They have a whole bunch of natural, delicious flavors. It's not a vape. Don't get me wrong. It's a natural air device. It's fully legal. It doesn't have anything bad in it. I even use it on an airplane. I get a few funny looks with people who think I'm vaping on an airplane, even though I'm not. It's just basically flavored air, and it tastes great. I found it made my cravings go out the window. It's weird. It's a crazy life hack, but it works, and it's super sexy and cool looking too. So it's called Fume, F-U-M. You can get 10% off this thing if you go to tryfume.com, tryfume.com. Use code BEN to save 10%. So you can accelerate humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up what's called their Journey Pack today. It has a whole bunch of cool flavors, including that crisp mint core and the maple pepper core, two of my favorites. So again, tryfume.com/BEN and use code BEN to save 10% off your order from Fume, F-U-M. All right, folks, clinical research has shown that therapeutically and for overall health and well-being, the most critical time to ground is when you sleep. The electrons you absorb when grounding neutralizes free radical damage, squelches inflammation, restores healthy endocrine function, enhances cellular gating and circulation. That then improves the cellular uptake of nutrients and oxygen and hormones while maximizing the removal of cellular waste. And you can now ground when you sleep. This company called Ultimate Longevity makes indoor grounded sleeping devices, and they've done clinical research studies on grounding the human body for health. When you sleep on these mats, you get 6 to 8 hours of uninterrupted grounding, meaning I could travel, unroll it onto my hotel room bed, and fight all of the radiation, the inflammation I got from flying on the airplane right there during a full night of sleep. Full body grounding, which is what these mats give you versus just your feet on the ground, maximizes the electron transfer because the more surface area contact, the more beneficial the electrons, the more the results. So you get these amazing benefits, and inside your body, this stream of electrons works as an anti-inflammatory, pain-relieving, anti-aging, antioxidant boost, squelching inflammation all night long. They've got over 20 peer-reviewed research studies that have been published on the extensive health benefits of grounding. For vagal tone, serum electrolytes, thyroid function, blood glucose, blood viscosity, sleep, pain, stiffness, blood pressure, stress, even depression and anxiety. It's crazy. So you can go to ultimatelongevity.com/Ben to get your hands on these grounding mats. You can do mattress, pillow, blankets, a whole bunch of other valuable tools to help you bring your inflammation down and jumpstart your healing process. Again, it's ultimatelongevity.com/Ben.
Are listening to the Inspired Lifestyle podcast with myself, Jag Cheema. And guess what? We're back in Mumbai. We've had quite a hectic travel schedule. Today's podcast is a little bit special because I've got Chris Gethin, who's going to be my co-host. How's it going, Chris?
It's going okay. After the recovery following our guest workout earlier, I'm on the mend.
Awesome, awesome. Well, today's podcast is definitely one that a lot of people are going to be inspired by. We are joined by one of the leaders in the biohacking space, none other than Ben Greenfield. Ben, how's it going?
I guess if perky is the word of the day, I feel pretty perky too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So Ben, like, this is your first visit to India.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of your experiences of the current towns and cities that you visited. And also, you've done a biohacking forum, the very first one in history that has taken place in India.
I have, according to my calculations. That was, what, yesterday? Day before yesterday. It's like 3 hours of amazingness. Hopefully folks can get a chance to listen where we put that out. And I have not gotten Delhi belly or coronavirus or any of the other things that people tried to scare me about coming over here. As a matter of fact, it's been the complete opposite. It's been amazing. The food is wonderful. I'm a huge fan of spicy spice, as you guys have witnessed. So I'm down to the chili peppers. I'm eating the chicken tikka. I'm enjoying the curries and even the flatbreads. And the people are very generous, very hospitable, very happy. The entire experience has been absolutely, absolutely wonderful.
Awesome.
All right. Okay. So in regards to the biohacking forum yesterday, it seemed like there was a lot of people very motivated to ask you a lot of questions at the event. And there's some real good questions as well. You know, do you feel like India is actually, based on that forum, really hungry, ready for biohacking?
Yes. I think not just biohacking, but just generally kind of an upgraded view of fitness, health, nutrition in general, because obviously a lot of what we talked about would not fall under the biohacking umbrella per se, but just general lifestyle concepts that make sense, you know, air quality, water quality, sleep, grounding and earthing, sunlight, hyperthermia and heat, hypothermia and cold thermogenesis, you know, water, minerals. We talked about a lot of basic foundational principles that people seemed pretty interested in, but also we did cover a lot of biohacks. I mean, you know, we geeked out on sleep for what must have been like 45 minutes, talking about everything from, you know, chili pads under your sheets to different ways to biohack light. We talked about, different immune system enhancers. We talked about ways to get the minimal effective dose of exercise. I mean, there's a lot that we went into that I think would fall under the category of biohacking. And yeah, the audience seemed pretty educated, pretty keen, pretty open to a lot of these ideas. So absolutely, I still am foggy as to how much of what we have in America is readily available here. You know, anything from like a photobiomodulation panel for red light treatments to some of the sleep technologies we talked about, like a chili pad, like a grounding or an earthing mat. But ultimately, I don't see that being a barrier. I simply see those type of products being, I would imagine, manufactured over here as they become more popular or in more demand.
Yeah, definitely in the future. You know, with the barrier at the moment, I think, like with the photobiomodulation, Lalit, who we were with earlier, actually has the Juve panels. But a lot of the time, you have to pay 100% tax. That's a lot that you have to pay on top of the shipping, you know. So that is a bit of a barrier. But like you said, with the manufacturing and stuff in the future, that is definitely a possibility. Now, just switching gears onto Ayurvedic herbs and supplements. Obviously, that's one of the big things that have come out of India, mm-hmm. you know, like your ashwagandha and stuff. Do you see that falling under like the biohacking umbrella?
No, that's more ancient wisdom, and it's ancient wisdom that should be approached with caution, because a recent meta-analysis of a lot of these herbs, Chinese traditional medicine and Ayurvedic herbs, showed hepatotoxicity and some pretty serious liver issues because many of these are tainted with metals. They are not pure. They may be laced with herbicides, with pesticides, getting sprayed with ethylene oxide. And so I think that these compounds can be useful. And as the knowledge of them becomes more widespread, people could hurt themselves if they're not paying attention to quality sourcing. I mean, I use Chinese herbs myself, but I have one guy that I go to, you know, a Chinese herbologist. He's a diplomat of Chinese medicine in Oregon. You know, everything he has is wildcrafted. He stands behind it. I know where he's getting it. And, you know, I rarely order herbs off of, say, Amazon for that reason, you know, unless there's a laboratory certificate of analysis or an NSF certification, you know, the Certified Good Manufacturing Practices Facility, the CGMP, that's a decent stamp to look for. But sometimes you got to go, you know, even more strict than that, especially when it comes to some of these herbs, because many of them are first pass liver. Many of them can be processed in a way that's very similar to a pharmaceutical compound. And if there are toxins on board that also need to be processed, I mean, you're essentially putting a pretty hefty load on the liver. So valuable, but you do need to be careful with them. And the fact is, you know, you can, using any compound, incorporate biohacks to make them more effective. Like, for example, any nootropic compound out there, right? Like lion's mane or any of the done-for-you stacks that exist, like Qualia or Siltep or Alpha Brain, you can actually enhance mitochondrial activity in neural tissue and blood flow to the brain and increase the effectiveness and the uptake of those compounds. Two things that I use for that. One is called a VIE light, and it's a head-worn red light therapy device originally developed for Alzheimer's and dementia that can be used in conjunction with some of these things to amplify their effects in neural tissue. Another example would be pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, or PEMF. And these are treatment devices traditionally used for things like inflammation, bone healing, stem cell production, but they can also be targeted right near the head and increase blood flow to the head. They open and close cell membranes. And so you can take a traditional, you know, say ancestral compound, such as an Ayurvedic herb, you know, like an ashwagandha, or, you know, anything else, you know, Ginkgo biloba, Bacopa, and you can combine it with the technology to upgrade the effect, which I think is kind of cool.
Interesting. I didn't know that about the PEMF. You could increase the uptake. So would that be like the electrodes or like the pillow that you can get with a BioBalance?
Yeah, PEMF is – so the electrodes, those would be typically cranial electrical stimulation.
Okay, so not like the flex pulse that you put on the knees.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to stimulate the brain or the body. You know, cranial electrical stimulation is – typically used to calm someone, to put them in a parasympathetic state. That would be something like the Circadia Fisher-Wallace device. Then you have transdirect cranial stimulation, which is typically a head-worn device that's used to enhance motor neuron activation. So you're increasing the speed or the extent to which the brain is talking to the muscles. And that would be something like the Halo Sport head-worn device. And then PEMF, yes, it would be something like the flex pulse, but using it in a setting that is, you know, closer to, say, like the pad placed near the occipital bone at the back of the head, or even using a larger mat. Like I use the Pulse Center's PEMF table when I'm at home, and I can simply lay on that thing or put the pad directly under my head and lay there while I'm, you know, reading a book, scrolling through some emails on my phone and get that same effect. So there's a lot of different ways to target the brain using biohacking technologies, and many of them work on different mechanisms of action. So, you know, TDCS for motor neuron activation, cranial electrical stimulation for calming yourself down, PEMF for opening and closing cell membranes and decreasing inflammation, or even something like the photobiomodulation device that I talked about, that V-light for increasing mitochondrial activity in neural tissue and eliciting certain brain waves like alpha or gamma are the two most popular that would be used or that would be targeted with a device like that.
Mm. So just going back to the Ayurvedic herbs a second, because not everybody's going to have access to a Chinese medicine doctor. You know, so should people, given the option, I assume, go for like a patented version of that ingredient, such as like a KSM-66, mm-hmm. they've got the third party testing, maybe Prop 65 Act of heavy metal contaminants, they should focus on something like that.
Exactly. Any of these patented versions of a compound like Relora for curcumin or KSM, I believe that's for ashwagandha.
Yeah, that's right. We actually visited the headquarters.
Here. Right. Cytocholine for one of the choline compounds. Yeah, there's a lot of these patented molecules that work quite well. You know, not just in Ayurvedic medicine, but across the board, you're typically going to get what you're looking for. Creatine, you look for Creapure. Creatine theanine, you look for something like Theocrine. You know, and so that's one of the things is if you see like a TM or trademark next to the actual ingredient itself, usually it's coming from a lab that you can vouch for.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk about mind health in the biohacking space. Do you think meditation plays a big role in that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's pretty common knowledge that meditation is good for the brain, is good to lower, you know, salivary and plasma cortisol. It's good for sleep onset. It's good for mimicking sleep cycles. It's good for that spiritual connection to oneself that many people should be focusing more upon, you know, as we talked about during the panel. You know, people care for their body, people care for their brain, but often they aren't caring for their soul. And things like meditation and yoga and fasting and study and solitude and silence and, you know, these type of things, these so-called spiritual disciplines are all fantastic. And meditation falls under that category. I think sometimes the merging of biohacking and meditation can get a little bit gimmicky, meaning, you know, apps like Headspace, Calm, Muse, etc., to the extent to where people feel as though they need a technology, they need an app, they need something wrapped around their head or cradled in their lap or attached to their body to meditate. And I would like to see more people simply sitting and meditating without the use of technology. Yes, something like Headspace, for example, can gamify each of your meditation sessions. You know, I have another app that I use called Pause, which allows me to drop in for a quick 1, 3, 5, or 10 minute meditation. But I in no way rely upon that to meditate, right? Like I taught my kids to, the first two ways I taught them to meditate was a traditional Native American sit spot, right? Just sitting outside in nature, smelling, hearing, sensing, and feeling, and seeing, and simply learning mindfulness-based meditation in nature. And this meditation technique works quite well if you return to the same spot to meditate on a repeated basis, because it trains your senses to notice changes in the environment during each meditation session that you do. Another way that I taught them to meditate was a very basic candle and hourglass meditation, sitting cross-legged, in this case, in the floor of our sauna, where I would simply have a 20-minute hourglass in the sauna, like where the sand drops in the hourglass. And their role would be to simply observe the sand as it fell through the hourglass for 20 minutes, right? No technology, no app, nothing, you know, a device, I suppose you could say, but that or a candlestick meditation where you're simply watching a flickering flame for 10 to 20 minutes. I mean, these are all ways that you can meditate without necessarily having the use of a technology or an app. And one thing that's important to realize about that is we know that a phone can be distracting. We know it's something that we associate often with work or a sympathetic response or socializing. And it's been shown that the mere presence of a phone on the table during dinner decreases the quality of the conversation and causes distractibility during the conversation versus if that phone were under the chair or off the table. And so I suspect that the presence of your phone during meditation may actually slightly detract from the quality of the meditation. But at the same time, if it takes an app to gamify meditation for you or to teach you about meditation or to make meditation more interesting for you, then I think the pros would still outweigh the cons. But long response to your question, but yeah, I think meditation is absolutely fantastic for the brain.
Sure. A lot of people say that meditation originated from India. There's a lot of camps, a lot of places where people actually travel from around the world to actually learn meditation, and then they go and teach around the world. So there's a big expectation when we talk about biohacking. People have this expectation of all of this technology. But I think, you know, people kind of fail to realize that sometimes it's quite simple. You don't need to actually go through apps to disconnect. Do you feel that there's more and more people around the world that find it difficult to disconnect and meditate now?
Yes. I mean, it's very easy in our day and age to not be mindful. It's very easy to live in almost like this hypnotic trance of constantly having something that you are listening to, having a screen that you are staring at, having something, you know, blasted into your ears or across your eyes, having notifications, having meetups, having calls. And so, the distraction that is available to us in the information era, in the internet era, is staggering. And it can be very difficult to simply tell someone, okay, go on a 1 hour hike without your phone. That's even difficult for a lot of people. So, yeah, I think that we are fighting an uphill battle in this age of distractibility. And I think that really one of the best things that you can do is incorporate times that you are not with technology. I mean, for us, it's our family dinner each night at the Greenfield home, where we're just playing board games for an hour and a half or two, and then playing some songs and music afterwards, and then going to bed. And the technology just isn't even around, you know, no laptops, no TVs, no phones. And that's a way for us to learn how to just be people with each other without technology. Another example would be workouts, right? Like workouts, I think are wonderful. Workouts, hikes, hitting the weights, whatever. It kind of can just take us away from that hubbub of technology. And sometimes it's good to work out with just no sound, listening to your body, being attentive to your breath, being attentive to your muscle recruitment patterns. And I think that there are ways that we can escape, and escape justifiably, right? Nobody's going to get on your back for having a family dinner and, you know, not responding to text messages between 7 and 10 p.m. because you're engaged in something that's arguably more important than that. Nobody's going to get on your back for, you know, disappearing in the morning to the gym for an hour and not being available on technology. But yeah, it certainly is an uphill battle that we fight.
Sure. Yes, it's funny when he spoke about, you know, just putting the phone away in the morning and evening is something that I try to encourage people that follow me. You know, sometimes I'll do a month challenge.
Right.
And then occasionally, because I can't always come here, and when I do come here, it's definitely not for a retreat. So what's something that my fiance, Sybil, actually came up with was, let's have an in-treat, yeah, where the phones, the computer, everything gets locked up in a safe for like 3 days. And then we pre-plan a lot of things. So Let's say someone's going to come around for acupuncture, massage, maybe a meditation session, and we just go for a hike or whatever. It's all pre-planned. So it's very easy. You don't have to find a phone to call someone. And during that time, we'd like to maybe like a vegetable juice fast as opposed to a clean fast. But I think that's something that everybody should incorporate into their lives every now and again, just 2 or 3 days. It's over a weekend, you know, where no one's really going to be on your back.
Yeah, I have a friend who recently went on a yoga retreat, and I think it was like a 5-day retreat, and he took his phone, but he did not take any charger at all. So he had his phone with a full battery, should he need to reach out for an emergency, make a call, etc. But he knew every time he turned that phone on, like it was that much less battery life that he'd have available. And so, you know, that's something simple that you can do as well. And then we, of course, need to be aware of the biological impact of phones. Right, we know, and we talked about this plenty on the panel, about the damages of EMF and Wi-Fi on cell membranes, on DNA. I mean, this phone here has it's got kind of a weak Wi-Fi signal and 2 bars on it. I mean, this phone is churning out massive amounts of EMF, even compared to if it had a strong Wi-Fi signal and a strong cell phone reception, because anytime it's searching because the signal is weak, it's going to churn out even more EMF. So that's why whenever I have the option to have the phone in airplane mode, it's in airplane mode, just because, I mean, you only have so many times in your life that you have the option to protect yourself from a lot of this EMF. And so if it's an option for you to not have it on, you just don't have it on. And so that's certainly a rule that I follow. Everyone in the room starts reaching for their phones?
Yeah, I'm on airplane mode now. Yeah. Good call. Good flip of the switch. All right, so this is the one question that I really wanted to delve into, is that the perception here in India, because I've dealt with a lot of foodies, and the food is definitely a part of the culture. And unfortunately, people are not cooking as healthy as they once were. As I mentioned yesterday, there was a pocket down South India that was a blue zone. Now it's dealing with the worst epidemic of diabetes and all these other health complications. And part of the perception here in India is that they think, you know, not everyone's working out like you or as lean or healthy as you, but they're eating plenty of ghee. Of course, ghee in moderation for some people is fine, but they put ghee on everything. And do you know what jaggery is?
Jaggery is it's a sugar from the sugar cane, but the way that they extract it is unlike ultra processed sugar.
Yeah,
it is white. It has all the minerals. It has nutrient density. It has vitamins. It's still sweet. It's still going to raise your glycemic index, but like coconut sugar or molasses, like a blackstrap molasses, or a non-nutritive sweetener like stevia or monk fruit, like any of these are more nutrient dense than processed sugar. So yeah, I actually have not a whole lot against sugar. In a hypercaloric state, both sugar and also fructose can not only be fattening but cause a great deal of inflammation. However, if I'm burning 2,000 calories a day and eating 1,800 calories a day, and my diet is 80 to 90% carbohydrate with an appreciable amount of that being sugar, it's not going to be that big of an issue, because just about all of that is being metabolized. My energy levels might not be quite as stable as if I were burning fatty acids or ketones as a fuel, but the actual metabolic problems with sugar kind of go out the window if you're actually cognizant of your total calorie intake.
Of course.
You know, that's a whole kind of can of worms that we could open when it comes to the physiological benefit of burning fats versus burning sugars. But I think that sugars are unfairly vilified. What should be vilified is sugars, and fructose would fall into that category as well, in a hypercaloric state. Because in fact, you know, there's even been studies that have shown a pretty hefty amount of fruit consumption, you know, which folks like Robert Lustig, for example, would say is pure poison, can actually result in stabilized appetite, weight loss, and favorable metabolic responses and a favorable gut microbiome, assuming someone is in a hypocaloric state. So the trick is, if you're going to have sugar, be very cognizant of your total calorie intake, because that's the issue with sugar in a hypercaloric state.
Yeah, and that is the issue that we're having in this country at the moment. Jag will move on to some of the issues that we're seeing here, worse than other countries at the moment. But one of the issues is that they're having a lot of jaggery, thinking, okay, there's a lot of nutrient-dense food over, you know, your typical cane sugar, so I'm going to eat a lot of it. And ghee, I've heard that's good. So they overconsume it, and they're not they don't have the activity to accompany it. So we're seeing major issues, especially within the teenagers and then the young adults and obviously the older adults across the board, just dealing with major, major weight gain, which is going to a lot of these health issues such as the diabetes, right. Obesity.
Yeah.
So and it's kind of interesting, by the way, in the U.S., you know, there's a growing number of people who are shifting instead to high fat, low carb intake. And we see a different set of metabolic issues in those folks. We see things like, especially in the absence of a decent amount of plant matter, kind of a lower amount of butyrate and lower bacterial diversity in the gut. We see people with some issues as far as, you know, liver and gallbladder bile production not being able to keep up with the amount of fat being consumed. So there are digestive issues with gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, etc. We see people with massively elevated triglycerides, which can be a cardiovascular risk factor as a result of extremely high intake of, you know, saturated fats, butters, marbled meats, etc. Not that I have anything against those, but I think that everything must be considered in the context of moderation. And so, yeah, you can create a lot of issues on a high-fat diet. You can create a lot of issues on a high-carbohydrate diet. And, you know, it really returns to that concept of choosing a diet that is appropriate for you based on your genetics, your blood work, your health history, your activity levels. And then, in addition to that, understanding that no matter the diet, there are certain things that are going to make that diet healthy and successful long term. Things that we actually discussed in that panel we did, eating in a parasympathetic state, meaning breath work or gratitude or prayer prior to a meal, chewing your food a pretty significant number of times, you know, 25 to 40 chews per bite is what you should be doing. And if you're eating slowly in an unstressed state, that's a lot easier to do. Being mindful of your food, the taste, the color, the preparation methods, the ingredients, how it makes you feel. And we also know that eating with people is another dominant characteristic we see amongst a lot of these blue zones. Again, despite or no matter the diet, you know, plant-based or omnivorous or anything like that, you know, eating with people, being around people as you celebrate food, that's another really, really big one. I mean, I recently tweeted this, that I think a lot of dietary arguments would go out the window if people simply learned to love their bodies, which also incorporates kind of being aware of how their bodies are responding to foods that they're eating. And that could include something as potentially woo-woo and esoteric as intuitive eating, right? Like, does this feel good to me as I'm eating this? Loving your company, meaning loving the people that you're with and loving to be with people as you eat. And then finally, loving your food, right? And what I mean by that is everything from, you know, where was this meat raised? Was it ethically raised? You know, was this a regenerative farming practice, or is this cow or beef or, you know, lamb or fish or whatever contributing to environmental damage? You know, was it sprayed with herbicides, pesticides, you know, glyphosate? Was the plant harvested properly, and was it grown in soil rather than dirt, and be a permaculture rather than monocropping? And so once we begin to lower food, we begin to become more aware of where it came from, and also a lot of the health characteristics that determine whether or not that food is healthy for us. And so all of these concepts would apply whether you're eating a plant-based diet or an omnivorous diet or a carnivorous diet or a keto diet or any other of the billion different diets out there. You need to step back and apply some basic principles that we know makes a diet healthy. And when you combine that with knowing your body and self-quantifying and choosing a diet appropriate for your genetics and your activity levels and your blood work, then you're on the road to setting up a diet for life that you're going to feel good on.
There's a lot of people in India who actually compare some of our ancestors, people, even people just as close as the 1940s and 1950s, there wasn't a lot of activity. There was a lot of activity then as compared to now. For example, if you wanted to order a meal right now, food, you could just press a few buttons on your phone and it'll be at your doorstep. And most likely it'll be unhealthy food. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about ghee and jaggery and some of these foods that people think are good for you, there's a lot more that actually comes into it, because those people in those times used to actually have to move a lot more naturally. Yeah. So like what you say, you know, they probably were burning a lot more calories and eating these foods and still being okay. Another thing is that in the sports industry, kabaddi, wrestling, is quite traditional in India. And there are still places in India where they still train in the old-fashioned way and they have loads of ghee. In fact, I was talking to somebody who came from a place called Kolhapur to see us a few days back. And he said they even put ghee in the sand where they wrestle. And I think there's a story behind that too. So would you say that, you know, like people think jaggery is actually good for digestion? We actually put a post out on one of our socials a few days ago. And we were surprised. There was 90% people from India who said jaggery is good for you and you should have it after every meal to help you digest your food. What do you think about that?
You know, I'm not familiar with the complete nutritional composition of jaggery and whether it actually includes any of these bitter compounds that would enhance digestion, right? We know potentially acidic foods like vinegar may enhance the insulin response to a meal. We know the same could be said of things like bitter melon extracts or, you know, the bitters you might have at a bar when you're having a cocktail. And so it's possible that there may be a digestive quality to jaggery, but again, in the absence of physical activity or in a hypercaloric state, probably the cons outweigh the pros. And I would say, why not just have something like Ceylon cinnamon or apple cider vinegar or lemon or bitters instead? I guess it's an issue also, you know, what you brought up as far as foods that would be superfoods and would be healthy foods in an ancestral context of physical movement, some elements of fasting, some elements of caloric restriction, compressed feeding windows, intermittent fasting. You know, a lot of these foods really are healthy in that context. But then you take your macadamia nuts and your organic blueberries and your bone broth and your sea salt and all these things. And, you know, and people shoving these foods down their gullets while sitting on their butts at the office at work, you know, these same foods in the end can be inflammatory. I mean, we know that any food is going to produce free radicals upon its metabolism. And if you are in a state of constant overfeeding, even if it's on healthy foods, the amount of inflammation that's going to be present, the amount of glycemic variability that's going to produce, the impact that's going to have on your triglycerides is still going to be pretty significant. So yeah, you can overeat superfoods. It's more difficult because many of them, because of their nutrient density and fiber content or protein content, are more satiating. But you know, we do live in an era where the knowledge and access to many healthy foods can be dangerous. This is one beef that I have with like Trader Joe's in the US, right? Like Trader Joe's, you can walk in there and, you know, everything kind of sort of looks healthy, right? Like turbinado dark chocolate almonds and, you know, giant burritos full of all these superfoods wrapped in some kind of a, you know, a thick whole wheat wrap. And, you know, many of the foods are packaged, many of them are processed. And, you know, you walk out of there and you fill your pantry with these foods and it's very simple to just mow through them because they're highly palatable, they're processed, they're fun to eat. You know, you open the crinkly package and they smell nice. And I mean, you can so easily just become morbidly obese or inflamed, you know, eating at a healthy grocery store like that. So, you know, it's probably still arguably healthier than shopping at, say, Costco and filling up your grocery shopping cart there to top off the pantry. But yeah, I mean, we do need to be careful even with healthy foods, and we need to understand the context in which they're eaten, the amount to which they're eaten, and whether or not we are living in an ancestral state or whether we're just marrying those foods to sitting in boxes and tubes, in which case we'd probably be better served, you know, fasting, having some water, and eating more plants.
All right, folks, you may have heard the recent podcast episode I recorded with this cat who designed a drink. His name is Zach Abbott. He designed a drink that you throw back, it's a little shot, and it digests the toxic byproducts of alcohol for you, meaning that you feel great the next day after you've been drinking. And while I only endorse holiday responsible drinking and responsible drinking in general, it is nice to know you can maybe sneak in an extra cocktail or a glass of wine just because that holiday party is so freaking long. And there's nothing to do but drink. So you throw back a shot of this stuff and it basically digests acetaldehyde for you, which is the chemical unwanted byproduct of alcohol. And so what they've done is they've bioengineered this probiotic to do that for you. And it works amazingly. You feel great the next day. It's very, very simple. You get a box of this stuff. You throw back a shot of it before you drink. Or if you forget, sometimes people are forgetful and you remember halfway through the party, you just throw it back then. And here's the deal.
They've got steep discounts going on. You go to ZBiotics, called ZBiotics, ZBiotics, ZBiotics if you're in Europe, ZBiotics.com/Ben, ZBiotics.com/Ben. You get 15% off your first order when you use code Ben at checkout, 100% money back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason because you had 8 glasses of wine and you woke up the next morning and you weren't feeling that great, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. But please don't have 8 glasses of wine. So you go to ZBiotics.com/Ben. Use code Ben at checkout for 15% off. You got to try this stuff. Everybody I've told about ZBiotics, they have literally come back and said, dude, I had no clue. I was skeptical first. I was skeptical myself. But it actually works. Very interesting. So zbiotics.com/Ben. All right, folks. Well, cold turkey might be great on sandwiches, but there's a better way to break a bad habit than quitting that bad habit, cold turkey. I'm not talking about some weird mind voodoo from your crazy neighbor standing on a nail bed or something like that. I'm talking about this thing called Fume. This little thing called Fume holds a hallowed place in my fanny pack, actually. Been hitting up the maple pepper core in that thing quite a bit. So anyways, the Fume is not a vape. It's a flavored air device. You breathe natural flavors through it. Like I said, I got the maple pepper core loaded up in mine right now. Turns out black pepper really hits the spot, so I can feel satisfied without breathing in or chewing on anything bad. It's amazing. I've got another one called the crisp mint core, so I can breathe in mint flavored air rather than a pen infused with something else. You know what I mean? That kind of bad habit that isn't good for you. Instead, you just basically use this pen, and it is an essential oil pen. It's amazing. A flavored air device. You get the taste sensation and the fidget and that hand-to-mouth action, but you don't have to feel guilty about the habit. It's a good habit to have. They have a whole bunch of natural, delicious flavors. It's not a vape. Don't get me wrong. It's a natural air device. It's fully legal. It doesn't have anything bad in it. I even use it on an airplane. I get a few funny looks with people who think I'm vaping on an airplane, even though I'm not. It's just basically flavored air, and it tastes great. I found it made my cravings go out the window. It's weird. It's a crazy life hack, but it works, and it's super sexy and cool looking too. So it's called Fume, F-U-M. You can get 10% off this thing if you go to tryfume.com, tryfume.com. Use code Ben to save 10%. So you can accelerate humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up what's called their Journey Pack today. It has a whole bunch of cool flavors, including that crisp mint core and the maple pepper core, two of my favorites. So again, tryfume.com/Ben and use code Ben to save 10% off your order from Fume, F-U-M. Well, folks, you and I, or the average American at least, spend an average of 90% of time indoors, breathing around 30,000 gallons of air daily. According to the EPA, indoor air can be 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some cases, 100 times more polluted, especially like your home gym where you're breathing in even more air. This can be a serious issue. Data shows that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths around the world. So you need air purifying technology, and the one that I like as a standalone system that doesn't require you to go re-outfit your entire home's AC system or ducts is called the Air Doctor. The Air Doctor filters out dangerous contaminants and allergens like pollen, pet dander, dust mites, and mold, so your lungs don't need to. Their Ultra HEPA filter has been independently tested to remove 99.99% of tested bacteria and viruses and virtually 100% of particles as small as 0.003 microns. They also feature whisper jet fans, 30% quieter than normal ordinary air purifiers, and they are extremely affordable and accessible. Furthermore, they're going to give you up to 39% off of one of their extremely impressive and efficacious air filters, or up to $300 off today. Here's how you lock this in. You go to airdoctorpro.com/BenG. You can get one with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund, minus shipping, but you're going to love it. airdoctorpro.com/BenG. You'll get up to 39% off or up to $300 off, so lock it in today, folks. You'll enjoy it. Clean air is something everybody deserves. You can get it with the Air Doctor.
According to a study, India is now known as the diabetic capital of the world. The diabetic population is hitting close to 69.9 million, and they say by 2025 it'll be 80 million.
What population of the UK?
Yeah, it's crazy. And just going back to what Ben just said, I walked into a place called Food Hall. Now they have some amazing foods here in India, which I saw that were quite, they were imported, so I recognised the labels. But there were a lot of local brands that say sugar free. But then when you read the label, they contain ingredients which are probably worse than sugar. Would you agree with that?
Can't pronounce them.
If a food is sugar-free or fat-free, it should cause you to raise an eyebrow. You know, for example, we know that high amounts of acesulfame potassium or sucralose or, any of these artificial sweeteners, even the sugar alcohols, can contribute to mild amounts of neurotoxicity or gas or bloating or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And many of them are simply being used as substitutes for sugar in that sugar-free compound. When you look at fat-free, fat-free yogurt, fat-free cottage cheese, fat-free milk, dairy was meant to be in its raw form with the fats and the proteins kind of globuled together and the enzymes present and the probiotics present. And when you homogenize, ultra-pasteurize, and then filter all of the fat out of dairy, it becomes a far different food. It essentially becomes, in most cases, lactose sugars combined with proteins that are in a format that winds up allowing them to cross the gut, wind up in the blood, and cause autoimmune issues. So just something as simple as fat-free yogurt or a sugar-free Coke. Yeah, I mean, that can definitely create issues. And I think when you talk about diabetes, I don't think it's any secret that eating a lot of processed carbohydrates, eating a lot of sugar would contribute to diabetes. But really, if you look at things from an insulin sensitivity standpoint, one of the biggest contributors to a diabetic state is inflammation. And inflammation is actually more readily caused by vegetable oil consumption than it is by sugar. And I think that if you look at the diet of someone who has developed diabetes or the diet of a largely diabetic population, you would probably be pretty shocked to find out that just as big an issue or bigger an issue than carbohydrate or sugar consumption is the consumption of vegetable oils, which place the body in an inflammatory state, which then renders you insulin insensitive. And that's what can cause that diabetic cascade that becomes all the worse in the context of sugar. But, I think that a diabetic who decides that they're not going to eat sugar and all of a sudden, here in this country starts eating, chicken tikka and stews and curries and, foods that are cooked in soybean, safflower, canola oil, etc., they're really leaving themselves in a state where they're going to be on a path of continued insulin insensitivity, and worsened inflammation unless they also clean up the vegetable oil component of inflammation.
So we were at a restaurant the other night, and when we were ordering the food, you and I, the waiter actually gave us limited information on how the food was cooked until the chef came out. And when Ben actually asked the chef specifically, how is the food cooked? Is it in vegetable? He says, well, yes. He goes, no, but we use soybean, thinking that that is not what mm-hmm. Ben meant.
Yeah. And
I think it's like, I
actually, it was kind of funny. Like, yeah. Soybean oil is vegetable oil. just because it says sunflower or safflower does not mean it's healthy. It's interesting. I made us a reservation actually just about 2 hours ago for dinner tomorrow night. I told them when I made the reservation, I said, please tell the chef that we would prefer for him to serve us items from the menu that he's able to cook in ghee or extra virgin olive oil rather than vegetable oil. And, in many cases, especially if you alert a restaurant ahead of time, which I think is prudent to do versus throwing them a curveball right when you arrive, they're happy to oblige. It's just a matter of being comfortable, being an informed consumer, and being comfortable putting your foot down and saying, my body is precious to me. I love my body. I love my cells. I do not want my cell membranes to be comprised of rancid oils that are going to affect every single transporter and receptor on that cell membrane surface. Because, again, you can eat a stick of cotton candy or pound through a bowl of processed sugar, and technically you could go and go for a long walk or do some hard weight training and burn that sugar as fuel, but you cannot do the same for vegetable oil. You cannot burn off vegetable oil. That's what your body is going to use to comprise its cell membranes and tissue structures.
Yeah, I think a lot of people go for convenience. I mean, we've noticed on the tour when we make a request for anything, it takes quite a while. So, for example, you go to a restaurant, you make an order, and most people actually give in once they make a request if they don't understand and say, you know what, I'll just have whatever you've got. And I think it comes down to actually understanding how precious your body is. And if you want to live longer, it's going to take a little bit of effort, right?
Well, you've got to prioritize yourself, I think, more than anything, because we're always here to serve, aren't we? You know, what we do, we serve. But the thing is, when you are trying to serve for the happiness of the chef or the waiter to bring whatever's convenient, then you're just not serving yourself. So one of the other things that we was mentioning about, you know, in regards to India's being the world leader in diabetics, they're also the world leader in the purchases now of mobile phones. Everybody's on a mobile device. Not everybody has a computer, but mobile devices now have become very affordable that everybody's got one, and you know the population here. So could you briefly explain, number one, the damaging effects of the mobile use here for people in India, and what can people do to hack their way to health while still having the use of their phone should they need it for business?
Probably the three biggest issues to be cognizant of when it comes to so-called non-native EMF, right? Electromagnetic signals that our human bodies have only been presented with in the past 100 years or so, versus electromagnetic fields that would be produced from, say, lightning striking the surface of the planet, or the natural electromagnetic frequencies that we know the Earth emits, which are actually very, very natural frequencies that can be good for the body, or even the frequencies we would get from photons of sunlight, for example, right? So electricity is not an issue. Electromagnetic frequencies are not an issue. But these non-native frequencies that are typically, you know, for example, in the case of 5G, very small millimeter waves that can penetrate tissue and we know may affect plants and insects, or operate, you know, in the case of 4G or LTE at higher power, especially when placed near the body, we're presenting our bodies with a biological assailant in terms of a power or a wave frequency that we have simply not, from an evolutionary standpoint, developed the ability to be able to deal with. And as a result of that, a few things that happen is, A, you see a pretty significant influx of calcium into the cell when a cell phone is placed near the body, or a Wi-Fi router is placed near the body, or you're standing next to an appliance like a dryer or a washer that's running on that AC circuit that travels to the house. Now, the problem with that is calcium is positively charged, and the inside of a cell is supposed to be negative compared to the outside of the cell, which should be positive. So all of a sudden, you're shifting a cell from a millivolt potential that should be like negative 60 millivolts, and you're shifting it towards whatever, negative 30 millivolts or 0 millivolts. And that affects every metabolic process within the cell. So that's one issue, is you're producing a positively charged cell when it should be negatively charged. The second issue is we know that these things can cause DNA damage, right? You can cause unraveling of DNA, you can cause protein damage, you can cause misfolding of proteins, and that's another big issue. And then finally, we know that they can downregulate the sensitivity of an inflammatory pathway within the body called NF-kappa-B. NF-kappa-B is very important for modulating inflammation, for raising it when it needs to be raised, for lowering it when it needs to be lowered. And that pathway gets downregulated. Your sensitivity to that pathway gets downregulated directly in response to non-native EMF. And so this begs the question, you know, well, are there things that you can do to offset some of that damage? And there absolutely is. This shouldn't be something that you use an excuse to just use your cell phone more, or to, you know, to just blast yourself with Wi-Fi all the time. But at the same time, you can prudently address some of the damage, especially when you're in an environment in which you have no control, like say you're traveling on an airplane, right, that has Wi-Fi enabled, that has, you know, probably at least 20 people that did not put their phones in airplane mode when the plane took off. So all the phones have zero bars, meaning that every single one of those phones has amplified at least 10 times over its EMF that it's putting out, because the phone is now looking for a signal during that entire flight at a much higher level than it would be if the plane were grounded and everyone had 4 or 5 bars of service, right? So there's a lot of issues. And you're a captive audience, right? So what can you do about that? So for the calcium, we know that the pharmaceutical calcium channel blocker that would be given for a heart condition can actually limit the calcium from coming into the cell, but most of your doctors are not going to prescribe you a calcium channel blocker if you come to them and tell them you want it because you're using your phone a lot. However, magnesium can cause a similar effect. like using a good absorbable form of magnesium every night before you go to bed. And then if you're traveling on an airplane, both before and after the flight, so that you offset the calcium that's influxing into the cell. When it comes to the DNA damage component, there are two things that repair the DNA. NAD and sirtuins. So NAD is something that you can upregulate via fasting, right? Which is why it's a good idea not to eat a lot on an airplane, for example, or when you're around a lot of electrical signals. But you can also upregulate NAD through a high consumption of fermented foods like kimchi, sauerkraut, yogurt, kefir, probiotic-rich compounds. And you can also use NAD supplements. You can get NAD IVs. I get an NAD IV every month. When I am on an airplane, especially a long-haul flight, I actually wear what's called an electrophoresis patch, which is an NAD patch that slow bleeds 1,000 milligrams of NAD into my body over 12 hours. I just slap it on my inner thigh during the flight, so my DNA is being repaired as it's being damaged. You can also use oral supplements. Two popular ones are NR and NMN. NAD isn't very bioavailable if you supplement with it orally, but NMN and NR are, and those can actually become bioavailable NAD within the body. So what I do is I get an NAD IV once a month, and then I just use oral NR or oral NMN in between those IVs. NAD will not be able to repair DNA unless you also have sirtuins present in your system. And sirtuins are something you're going to find from things like blue and purple foods or darkly colored foods like cacao, blueberries, red wine, purple cabbage. You can also supplement with things like resveratrol, another sirtuin-based compound that's about 100 times more powerful than resveratrol is taro stilbenes. It starts with P-T-E-R-O, taro stilbene. And there are a variety of different sirtuins. You know, green tea is rich in sirtuins. If you just Google, you know, sirtuin-rich foods, you'd find a whole host of foods that you can weave in throughout your diet. And if you're also fasting, eating fermented foods, and even supplementing with NAD, that's something that can help to repair the DNA damage that occurs in response to these Wi-Fi signals and cell phones, etc. And then the final thing, the NF-kappa-B pathway, there's two things that really help to modulate and upregulate that pathway. One is fasting, right? So intermittent fasting or compressed feeding windows or eating minimally, especially when you're on long-haul travel. And then the other one is the use of supplements, specifically ketones, ketone esters or ketone salts. And so to put this boots to the streets, I'm on that airplane, that metal tube. I got to fly back from Delhi or from Mumbai back to Spokane, Washington on Saturday. So I will have, and I have it in my refrigerator down in my hotel room right now, I have one bottle of ketone esters. I'll drink half that bottle before the flight takes off. I'll drink half that bottle when I get to where I'm going. I have a bottle of magnesium capsules. I'll take four before the flight takes off. I'll take four when the flight lands. And then I'll have that NAD patch that I'll put on. And I'm always eating a diet that's pretty wide in a variety of colored foods. So I already know my sirtuin levels are doing pretty well. But that's how I would hack a long-haul flight to at least minimize some of the damage that's going to occur from this non-native EMF in that very non-native EMF-rich environment.
Talking about environments, the Indian air pollution is amongst the worst in the world. And some cities in India are deemed to be hazardous air quality. And these people have actually had studies which state that it's almost like smoking two packets of cigarettes a day. Yeah. What kind of biohacks would you say that people could do to actually combat these problems?
Yeah. Well, first of all, there's a company called Atmos that's developing almost like a mask that's like a HEPA air filter, a wearable HEPA air filter. It's called an AOR. They debuted at the Consumer Electronics Show this year, and I'm actually going to try to get my hands on one of those for a future trip to India. Right now, I just use those I believe it's called the N95 disposable mask, which is a pretty good mask. And that can, of course, help with some of the issues when you're walking through the streets or the airport. You can also, if you live in India, and for example, I have a client in Bangalore, and he has these molecule air filters spread around his house. It's different than HEPA air filtration, which is good, but it's a micro filtration system that is about 100 times more sensitive than even a HEPA air filtration. But these standalone air filters planted throughout your room or throughout your office, I think the two best ones out there are the Air Doctor and then the Molecule, that one I just mentioned. The Air Doctor is a HEPA, so it's not as sensitive as the Molecule, but it's also not as expensive. We also know that in studies done on smokers, there are certain things that can reverse the lung damage caused by smoking. And of course, we could extrapolate those studies to air pollution. Taurine is one example. So you just have a six-pack of Red Bull every day. Or a supplement with something like, you know, Now Foods taurine powder or a good taurine supplement. Full-spectrum antioxidants, right? As long as you don't consume them right after a workout, you know, things that are rich in vitamin C and vitamin E and vitamin A, some of your tocopherols, your tocotrienols, you know, all of these are very potent antioxidants. There's one that's a mix of the eight different forms of vitamin E called annatto, an extract of the annatto plant, and that one's a fantastic form of vitamin E. Astaxanthin, very good DHA-rich omega-3 fish oil. You know, any of these things that would be considered pretty potent antioxidants can also help to not only reverse the damage caused by cigarette smoking, but almost kind of scrub the arteries. There's a fantastic book called Eat to Beat Disease by Dr. William Lee. And that book has a whole host of flavanol and polyphenol-rich strategies that essentially scrub the arteries and repair a lot of the damage that's caused by pollution. And essentially it comes down to eating, you know, a widely varied diet rich in a rainbow colored of foods with lots of phytonutrients and herbs and spices. But there are specific compounds that are especially effective, you know, like astaxanthin and like taurine. So that would be a good book. And by the way, I would be remiss not to mention, as we were talking about EMF, for people who just want to better understand and wrap their heads around the idea of the human body being a battery, there is a book by Robert Becker called The Body Electric, which is quite good. And then also a book by Jerry Tennant called Healing is Voltage, which is quite good. And then when it comes to the air pollution piece, I would get a copy of Dr. William Lee's Eat to Beat Disease and weave in some of the foods that he's identified at his anti-angiogenesis foundation for helping to undo a lot of the damages of air pollution.
India has a huge problem with alcoholics. It's alcohol available absolutely everywhere. You can be at an airport at 6 a.m. in the morning. It'll be harder to find a bottle of water than it would to find two beers. It's like one buy one, get one free. A lot of people who consume alcohol at high levels think that they combat any damage by going to the gym and probably sweating out in the morning, going to the steam sauna. What do you have to say about that?
That's kind of synonymous with vegetable oil. You can't just burn it off, because the acetaldehyde produced by alcohol can actually damage the blood-brain barrier and cause neurotoxicity. And so, sure, you can heal the blood-brain barrier with things like cold water immersion, cold water face dunks, the use of magnesium, that pulsed electromagnetic field concept that I talked about, that's also very healing to the blood-brain barrier. Probiotic compounds, even lifestyle tactics like meditation and yoga, those have been shown to have an impact on the blood-brain barrier. So there are things you can do to undo some of the damage of alcohol. You can also incorporate strategies to mitigate the effects of the dehydration, right? Like using good trace liquid mineral compounds and sea salts, and, you know, take activated charcoal after you've been out drinking. But ultimately, at some point, you have to realize that there are ways that you can enjoy a social night out, or that you can enjoy a dinner party or a cocktail party without drinking copious amounts of alcohol. With the basic, most simplistic concept being that you get things from the bar that don't have alcohol in them, or very trace amounts of alcohol in them, so you still fit in with a drink in your hand and still don't feel awkward socially, but you're able to still kind of, you know, have a drink and enjoy yourself. So an example of that would be, you walk up to the bar, or, you know, the waiter comes and you say, well, I'd like sparkling water on the rocks, lemon or lime, a splash of house bitters, and maybe a little splash of pomegranate juice or something like that, right? So essentially you're drinking something kind of fun and fizzy, but it doesn't have actual alcohol in it. The next level up is that there are a lot of companies now producing mixes of things like adaptogenic herbs and different nootropic compounds that give you a really feel-good dopaminergic effect but do not contain alcohol. Kin Euphorics, K-I-N Euphorics, is one company that makes like kind of like a done-for-you cocktail that doesn't have alcohol in it. I recently gave a Boundless book launch talk at the Assemblage in New York City, and the entire event was catered with 12 different drinks that were all like mixes of cacao and reishi and chaga and cordyceps and astragalus and ashwagandha and all these wonderful drinks. And you could just kind of choose, oh, I want the one that makes me more loving, like the heart opener drink, or I want the one for energy, or I want the one to wind down at the end of the day, but none of them actually have alcohol in them. Similarly, when I gave a talk just this week in Bangalore, there was a hotel down there, the Radisson Blue down there. Their bartender actually specializes in non-alcoholic cocktails, and they just have a selection of house bitters, like mole bitters and Thai bitters and elderberry bitters, and they blend those with ices and fresh juices and, you know, different fruits, and make an amazing drink that gives you a feel-good effect without alcohol. And then if you guys are familiar with GHB, you know, the old date rape drug, you know, that was very similar to a ketone body called 1,4-butanediol. And, you know, one of the reasons it was so effective was because it had like this really sedative effect, and it was like alcohol on steroids. Well, it turns out that there's a very similar cousin to 1,4-butanediol. It's a slight molecular configuration. It's called 1,3-butanediol. 1,3-butanediol is a ketone, and you can have a cup of tonic water on ice with a squeeze of lemon and put about 10 to 15 milliliters of 1,3-butanediol in there. It will not roofie you like GHB, and you get this amazing feel-good effect that mimics alcohol with none of the toxicity and none of the acetaldehyde production. So what I'm excited about is the future of like alcohol-free cocktails that not only taste pretty good, but also make you feel good in a similar way to alcohol with none of kind of the poisoning effect.
That's awesome. That's fascinating. Yeah. Does that help with your deep sleep cycle as well? I know a lot of bodybuilders back in the day would take that to help them sleep to recover.
So I've experimented with 1,3-butanediol, and you get kind of like this feel-good buzz. You know, it's definitely not an I-want-to-go-to-sleep buzz. It's more like I'm ready to socialize type of buzz. However, I've mixed it a couple times with alcohol and literally felt as though all I could do was crawl into my bed afterwards and slept pretty soundly. My deep sleep was not much higher than it normally is, but it certainly knocked me on my ass when I had 1,3-butanediol. And this kind of defeats the purpose of what we're talking about, but put a little vodka or gin in there and I was out like a light. Ultimately alcohol does impact sleep cycles pretty significantly. So any of the things I just mentioned are going to be better for sleep than alcohol. Mm.
Well, this will be my last question before Jag wraps this up. But being in India now, you know, over the past week, and you mentioned earlier that maybe, you know, in the future there will be places here that will start building out photobottom biomodulation devices or whatever. But what does India have to do, do you think, to catch up with the rest of the world? You know, we in the US, there's people such as yourself that have great platforms and podcasts and books. And then in the, you know, when we have Paleo FX, and then in the UK, we have the Health Optimization Summit and a lot of biohacking meetups and stuff like that. But nothing as such yet in India. What does India have to do you think, to catch up with the rest of the world?
It's a multimodal approach. From a very big picture overview, India, like the U.S., largely relies upon an agrarian economy based on monocropping, right? Monocropping of compounds like corn, like wheat, that ultimately wind up creating ultra-processed carbohydrate-rich foods that contribute to a lot of the problems that they're having. You know, and vegetable oil is very similar. You know, many of these are monocrops as well, you know, like rapeseed for canola, etc. So one thing that has to change is the actual farming practices, more regenerative agriculture, more permaculture, more of an awareness, a lot of times top-down, of the way that food is grown and the type of food that is grown and is subsidized so that it is basically... It's more expensive to eat unhealthy food, right? Mm-hmm. That's essentially what part of that will come down to: less availability of these highly processed carbohydrates because they're not subsidized, or these highly processed vegetable oils because they're not subsidized. So that's one thing. Another would be, and we see this increasingly in the U.S., greater availability to food that is healthy, that has been vetted. So we have websites like Thrive Market in the U.S. where you can go, you can shop on that website, and you automatically know everything is curated to be non-GMO, organic, sustainably sourced, ethically sourced, and, you know, even shipped in recyclable packaging. And so, you know, services like that that can actually deliver things to people that they don't have to question whether or not are healthy, but that have already been vetted to be healthy. And very similarly, boots on the ground, brick and mortar style grocery stores, you know, and Whole Foods certainly has its set of issues, just like Trader Joe's does, but a series of grocery store chains that actually allow people to have access to really good, healthy food. I think that the prevalence of content produced by guys like you, Chris, that's also something that is important, right? More podcasters, more bloggers, more content, more authors who are putting out information that's scalable and accessible to the entire population, but that specifically flies in the face of the old school message of fitness and nutrition, which is, you know, drink a lot of whey protein, eat a lot of maltodextrin and fructose and juices, and, you know, beat yourself to a pulp in the gym. You know, more of a message of natural living, ancestral living, sun, light, air, water, electricity, low-level physical movement throughout the day, intermittent fasting, love, relationships, a social life, like people realizing that fitness goes a lot further than just like whatever, you know, walking into a Globe gym in your spandex, right? Because as you know, Chris, you know, we could go to a bodybuilding show in the U.S. or anywhere and see people who look like Adonis from a distance. But when you get up close to them, they're inflamed, their skin is red, you know, their farts could just kill everybody on an elevator. And it's because they are, you know, quote, healthy as far as what society would expect on the outside, but unhealthy on the inside. So redefining what fitness means by having actual smart fitness influencers preaching a message that's more holistic rather than kind of like the dyed in the wool fitness message from the 80s and from the 90s, which it seems like a lot of people are still caught up in. Those would be just a few of the small things that I think could be implemented. And probably the final thing, the elephant in the room, is that all of this, just like any change, starts with our children, right? Because even though our generation may be mildly screwed from what we've grown up with and the way that we were raised, we have a lot of power over how we can influence the direction of future generations by simply starting at home, starting with educating our kids, starting a patio or a backyard garden where they learn to love their food and they grow a relationship with their food, teaching your children how to cook in the kitchen, teaching your children how to naturally move throughout the day, showing your children that physical fitness does not have to be a suffer fest, unless that's what you enjoy, like you and me, Chris, mm-hmm. but can instead just be movement and physical activity and sporting. If we can begin with the children, that's going to make a huge impact on the future of any country, any organization. And so I think that's important too. And that's like what Stephen Kotler and Peter Diamandis talk about in their new book, The Future is Faster Than You Think. You know, that education needs to be completely transformed. We live in a different era. And I think a big part of transforming education is also giving kids a more holistic view of health and fitness and nutrition in general.
Awesome. You mentioned authors, and I just want to congratulate you on your new book, Boundless, which is the number one bestseller on Amazon in 8 different categories. And you've also got an audiobook.
You know more about that than I do.
Yes, amazing. Well, I certainly do. I can't wait to get my hands on it. But I've heard that I'll have to pay for extra luggage if I'm going to travel with it because it's a big book. Can you tell us a little bit about that book and how people may be able to access it?
Yeah, it's about 3 years worth of writing and accumulation of all the research I've done over the past several years on a lot of these concepts, not just muscle gain and fat loss, but digestion, sleep, hormone enhancement, immunity. You know, there's a chapter that's over 100 pages long on anti-aging and longevity tactics that range from everything from fasting techniques all the way up to, you know, fringe peptides from Russia. There's a lot in there even on concepts that I've only grown to appreciate much over the past several years, you know, spirituality, like we were talking about earlier, meditation, yoga, love, sex, relationships, gratitude, you know, a lot of these things that affect ourselves from an energetic frequency standpoint and also affect the one single part of us that I think is the most important, but that tends to be the most shriveled up and neglected, you know, our souls, our spirits, our purpose, our meaning in life, and our fulfillment is ultimately not derived from six-pack abs and having the perfectly prepared rotisserie chicken and ghee, but instead by how much love, you know, how much, you know, like I tell my kids, how much you love God and love others is a lot more important than how you eat or how you look. And so, you know, I weave a lot of that into the book as well, because I think that that's a message that, that people need to learn more about, you know, how to practically implement a lot of these spiritual disciplines into their life. It wound up being like 1,200 pages when I turned it into the publisher, and we kind of, you know, refined it and with a scalpel got it down to about 650 pages. And every single chapter has a website that people who buy the book get access to that has all the podcasts, all the books, all the resources, all the articles, all the references, like everything that you can do to take a deeper dive into anything you find interesting. So I created it almost be just like a cookbook for anything that you would want to explore about your body, whether it's your immune system, or, you know, your home gym, or your rate of fat loss, or, you know, figuring out how to actually customize a diet for you. I've got like 12 to 13 different dietary kind of like models in the book that you can choose from based on your blood work, your biomarkers, your saliva, your stool, et cetera. So, yeah, it's comprehensive. It's a tome, and I'm glad that it's over with now, but it is now available on Audible. It's available on Kindle. It's available as my favorite, a big, beautiful, like hardcover coffee table kind of book that's almost like a collector's edition that you can just have around as almost like an art piece. And internationally, the best way to get it would be go to boundlessbook.com/book-depository. I know that's a mouthful, but it's boundlessbook.com/book-depository. And otherwise, I know in America and Canada, you just go to boundlessbook.com or to Amazon. You can get it pretty easily.
Awesome. Although there's audio versions, audio books available, I always prefer to actually have a hard copy of any book that I get.
Yeah. I tell you what, it'll give you a crazy delt workout, because when I usually sleep in bed for the last 30 minutes before I lull myself off, and I like to have it in this position.
Yeah.
As opposed to like in that position, but I'm forced to sit up with this thing because it is huge. But it's a phenomenal book. I could only imagine what it was like to read through it again when you have to edit that thing. It was
the editing process alone was like 6 months long.
Yeah, I should imagine. Yeah.
But one thing that I'll stand behind is there are over 3,000 scientific references in that book. There were so many scientific references, we couldn't put them in the book because it took up too many pages. And so you actually have to go to the chapter for the website web page for each chapter. And there you can see hundreds for anybody who's a geek and just wants to go to every PubMed study that's referenced within the book. So it is robustly scientifically referenced as well, which is something that I really wanted to ensure happened with that book.
Yeah, it is phenomenal. Well, congratulations on that, Ben. Yeah.
So before we wrap up, I'd just like you to list 10 of your favorite biohacks.
Seriously, 10? Okay. Red light therapy. Cold. Heat, grounding / earthing, the use of NAD and sirtuins, the use of peptides like Epitalon or BPC-157 or TB-500 for healing or for longevity. I've been really getting into blood flow restriction training, which I would consider to be a biohack, but you can take that from a, you know, $40 set of blood flow restriction bands on Amazon to a $1,200 KAATSU training device to a $75,000 VASPR training machine. I just think the idea of blood flow restriction training is amazing. Single set to failure training using something like a Peak Fit Pro or an ARX Fit. I also think that's a very cool exercise biohack. Anything that biohacks breath work, like a power lung or a relaxator or a training mask or anything that allows you to use like a wearable to train inspiratory and expiratory muscles, diaphragm, CO2 tolerance, etc. I think, what are we at, 7?
I think we're at 9 now.
Yep. And then, let me see. If we're at 9, I guess I better go big with 10. I would say the last thing, let me think of something that's So how about for immunity? I'll give you one last one for immunity because I've been using it a lot here in India, every day here in India. I've been nebulizing glutathione. So you can get this liquid glutathione substance called glutastat. And I've written about it before on my website. If you do a search for it at bengreenfieldfitness.com, but I have a small portable nebulizer, which is like a mask that you put on, put a little bit of this liquid glutathione in the nebulizer, and essentially just like fills my nasal passages with glutathione, which is one of the most potent ways to knock out mold, mycotoxins, airborne pollutants. It helps to eliminate your risk for getting upper respiratory tract infections when you travel, etc. So I would say nebulized glutathione is one that's hot on my mind right now because I've been using it every day since I got here.
Awesome. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Ben Greenfield's top 10 biohacks. Ben, I just want to say thank you very much for taking the time out to be on my podcast. And my co-host, Chris Gethin, awesome. Thank you.
Well, thanks for listening to today's show. You can grab all the show notes, the resources, pretty much everything that I mentioned over at bengreenfieldfitness.com, along with plenty of other goodies from me, including the highly helpful Ben Recommends page, which is a list of pretty much everything that I've ever recommended for hormones, sleep, digestion, fat loss, performance, and plenty more. Please also know that all the links, all the promo codes that I mentioned during this and every episode help to make this podcast happen and to generate income that enables me to keep bringing you this content every single week. So when you listen in, be sure to use the links in the show notes, use the promo codes that I generate, because that helps to float this thing and keep it coming to you each and every week.